The Insights Idaho Department of Finance communicates department news and perspectives to aid consumers in making educated financial decisions and to inform both industry and consumers of regulatory and consumer protection issues.
Hello, welcome to the 8th episode of Insights. I'm your host, Celia Kenny, Consumer Affairs Officer with the Idaho Department of Finance. Today, I'm joined by Consumer Finance Bureau Chief Aaron Van Engelen and Supervisor of the Regulated Lending Program, Tom Nate, to discuss an increasingly popular buy now, pay later financing model and unravel some of the mystery around how these loans work and what sets them apart from their more traditional counterparts like credit cards. So a little bit about our guest today. Tom Nate has been with the department in various capacities for 14 years, most recently as the supervising examiner in the Regulated Lender Program. He has had a career that spans almost 30 years in finance and in the banking industry, and he brings a passion for helping industry and consumers alike. Aaron Van Engelen is with the Consumer Finance Bureau as Bureau Chief with the department for 18 years, and our listeners may recognize her voice as she's been featured on two previous episodes of this podcast now, Transitioning to Financial Independence and Why Financial Education Matters. There are so many options at our fingertips to finance a purchase rather than pay for it up front, but it does feel like I'm seeing buy now, pay later everywhere recently. So I do think it's a great topic to learn more about. Aaron, I'll turn things over to you. Can you briefly summarize why the Idaho Department of Finance is interested and involved with consumer lenders like those offering buy now, pay later?
Yeah, the department's mission is primarily to safeguard the financial health of Idahoans through appropriate oversight of diverse financial institutions, to educate and protect consumers, and to foster sensible innovation into the financial services market. You know, we strive to educate our consumers and industry on the compliance of these services to help them navigate the benefits and potential pitfalls they might experience. Buy now, pay later products are a fairly new service with some historical roots. Today, we're going to explore how these products can provide a beneficial service to Idahoans and talk about the risks to avoid in the process. So, Tom, that brings me to you. As Celia mentioned in your bio, you have a wealth of experience in banking and finance. And I know, having worked with you for 14 years, that we can learn a lot from you. Can you give our listeners a brief breakdown on the key components of buy now, pay later?
Sure, Aaron, I'd be happy to share a little bit of knowledge today. Essentially, buy now, pay later is a short-term extension of credit. It's a point-of-sale purchase option that allows the buyer to defer payment on their purchase. These payment options can vary, but typically a standard model would allow the purchaser to pay for the purchase over four equal installments. First payment is usually due at time of purchase, with the other three payments due in two-week intervals. Typically, the lender doesn't charge any interest to the buyer. However, other fees may apply. Late fees, return payment charges, for example.
Some of those pitfalls.
Exactly.
So with that in mind, I mean, how would a customer access or get approved for a buy now, pay later option? I mean, what are the resources available to people if they want to do a buy now, pay later?
Sure. Good question. In today's market, there are primarily two different delivery models from industry. One is a merchant-driven option. The other is a lender application-based. The merchant model is offered at the point of sale. At the time of payment, a consumer is given the option either direct from the merchant or by checking a box in their online checkout cart, for example, to split the payment up. If the consumer says yes or agrees to those options, they answer a few basic questions to see if they qualify. The other option is a lender-based application, a direct-to-consumer link from the lender. The consumer first sets up a user access and a profile on the lender's app to get approved for the lending amount. Then the lender's app can link the consumer to the approved merchants or payment choices at time of checkout.
Interesting. Okay, so we do have some different opportunities there. What do you think the primary benefits are of a buy now, pay later financing? I mean, to look deeper, what is the appeal to consumers in this type of financing? Why would I want to split up something into four payments?
I think there can be a number of different benefits depending on the user. Some of those that I certainly see, most consumers like that it's quick and seamless. The application is minimal. They typically just give some basic information, their name, email, mobile number, maybe date of birth. And as long as you have a repayment source in the form of a debit card, credit card, or a bank account, most lenders don't do a hard credit inquiry, and you're off and running, you're approved. There's convenience. Consumers don't have to worry about physically going down to a lender to get approved. They can do this right at the merchant, or they can do it in the comfort of their own home on the lender's app. There's a lower cost as well. Most buy now, pay later options do not charge interest over the payment term, so this could be a cheaper option than saying buying on a credit card. However, consumers need to be aware of the other charges that could apply. There's straightforward payment structures. Pretty simple. Make my purchase. It's 4 payments, no interest. Payments are due every 2 weeks. And it can provide an expanded access to credit for some. Because most lenders don't do a hard credit inquiry or they don't base the approval on traditional credit scoring models, more people may qualify.
So based on the points that you just made, I have a couple of follow-up questions.
Sure.
So one, you mentioned, you know, the convenience and that the lenders are not doing a credit inquiry or a hard credit inquiry. How is the person who's providing you with the installments looking to see that you're able to make those 4 payments?
Most of these are using a traditional qualifying model, or an untraditional qualifying model. They're using machine learning and algorithms that then tie into third-party vendors that can validate information almost instantaneously. They're reaching out to the employer. They're reaching out to validate addresses. They're tying information to bank accounts to look at histories and structure there.
So we're still having some form of verification of income to make sure that the individual has the ability to make those 4 payments.
Usually to some level, but not always.
You also mentioned that consumers need to be aware of other charges that may apply. I'm thinking about if I miss a payment because I wasn't able to make one of those 4 payments, are there additional charges that they would be taking because I was late on a payment or I missed one?
Yeah. In the instance of a late payment, most of these lenders require auto pay or automatic payment from the bank account. If those payments aren't made on time or if there isn't sufficient funds in the account, then fees could apply. For example, you miss that payment, don't have the funds, a late fee could be charged. If the funds aren't in the account and the lender has to represent that payment, there could be a non-sufficient funds fees or representment fees that could apply. And that lender could represent that check multiple times on a single payment.
Okay. How would a consumer know what the charges are that they would incur if they missed a payment or if their automatic payment didn't go through?
Well, one, I would encourage them, they need to review their contracts or their agreements that they're signing. A lot of times, consumers think this is out of sight, out of mind. They're doing it digitally. So they're not realizing that when they check a box or agree, that they're actually signing that legal contract. And usually in that legal contract, it'll spell out those terms, those fees for late fees or returned item fees. The other thing they need to monitor is their bank account. In most cases where they've given pay access, it kind of becomes out of sight, out of mind, but I would encourage them to monitor their bank account, make sure that those payments are going out timely, that money is in the account to cover those payments when they're due, because they're going to be due every 2 weeks. So if they don't pay attention to that, those fees could hit and add up fairly quickly.
And we both know that when you're signing up for something online, the terms and conditions box gets checked frequently without reading.
We like to just hit continue.
You know, it seems to me and not uncommon that companies would be interested in making a profit. That's what their purpose is to make a profit on whatever business they're doing. So if companies aren't charging interest, how are they making money from these transactions?
Most lenders are taking a fee from the merchant, a percentage of the purchase. That's their primary revenue source or was the initial model. But more and more now, lenders, especially ones that are using the application-based models, they're harvesting consumers' information. They're gathering more information about that consumer, their buying habits, and they're monetizing that information.
As a consumer myself, harvesting data does not sound appealing, but we can follow up on that in just a little bit. Can we start with the potential challenges or risks of buy now, pay later financing for potential borrowers?
Sure. There's a number of them potentially. First and foremost, I would encourage borrowers to be fully aware of what they're agreeing to. Again, read the disclosures. Be knowledgeable about the terms before agreeing to the buy now, pay later financing. And retain a copy of the agreements. Or more specifically, retain digital access to how to reach those agreements. In general, other risks that may be present, a lack of standard disclosures. Most buy now, pay later lenders are not required to provide standard cost of credit disclosures under Regulation Z because the length and term of the product doesn't trigger those requirements.
Now, since we haven't covered this, Regulation Z, for those in the audience.
Sorry, my industry parlance. Regulation Z is the Truth in Lending Act.
Excellent.
These are terms that a lender usually has to give to a borrower about the cost of the credit. Also, most of these lenders aren't giving out reminders or periodic statements because the term is so short and those payments are happening every 2 weeks. You don't get those reminders per se. The compulsory use of auto pay. Most lenders require the use of auto pay, so payments go out with no additional action from the borrower. And some lenders make removing those authorizations for auto pay challenging or untimely. So stopping or deferring or disputing payments could be a challenge. Dispute resolutions come into question. What happens if a consumer returns the merchandise or there's faulty merchandise? That dispute resolution takes time, and usually payments do not stop. There may be a delay in receiving credit while the merchant notifies the lender of the processed return, and the borrower may be required to continue to make installment pays or have other fees in the interim. Product stacking is another concern.
Okay, so now you're starting to use terminology that I'm not super familiar with. What is product stacking?
Product stacking is where a borrower may take out multiple buy now, pay later loans over a very short period of time, resulting in payments that would overlap and be due simultaneously. So this may lead to overspending by providing a means for a consumer to purchase more goods than they otherwise would. And as we all know, taking on too much debt can negatively impact credit and the ability to repay other obligations.
So if I'm a consumer and have this buy now, pay later option, to me seems like something that could potentially get a consumer into debt that they're not wanting to be in, because it's like, oh, if I start purchasing things by saying, okay, I have this and I can do it in four payments and I can make the one payment, and I want to buy this and I can do it in four payments and I can make the one payment. If we get to a point, now we get a consumer who's stacked these products, like you're saying, and the overall total of those different payments may not be something they can afford.
Exactly.
Okay.
That total compilation of payments becomes a burden that they may not have planned on initially. We've mentioned late fees. We've mentioned the returned or non-sufficient funds fees. Those are still there with most lenders. They need to pay attention to those. And the last concern I would have would be the harvesting of consumer data, that where lenders are capturing the information and the buying habits of a buyer, and they're using those to create other sales avenues, advertising, and revenue streams.
So it's thinking similar to, you know, my internet search history. Google knows that I looked for a certain type of shoes one day, and all of a sudden I'm seeing all of the advertisements for those shoes. Are you saying those kinds of things would be coming through in the application where they're getting their products?
Yes. I mean, that lender, they're not listening in the sense of how Google does, but that lender is capturing the information you're providing in your application. They're capturing the information about your purchasing habits, and that's then what allows them to drive and monetize that data.
And if you're not careful, that's going to start leading to that product stacking. So I'm learning something new today. This is great. So you mentioned credit reporting. Are buy now, pay later lenders required to report consumer activity to the credit reporting agencies?
Under law, they're not mandated to have to report. They should be disclosing to a consumer if they choose to. Some lenders do report, other lenders don't. So there again, a consumer needs to be aware of what they're agreeing to with that lending option.
Okay, so, I mean, like many other consumer finance products that we talk about, I think buy now, pay later, it's not a bad product. It's just one of those, every financial product is a good product and if used correctly. And so the consumer just needs to understand what the parameters are of that and what they're getting into before they sign up.
Be a little educated.
Well, and that's what we're here to do, right?
Yes.
So my last question, Tom, for you is, what other features do you see in buy now, pay later that could impact the consumer?
This one, it kind of comes back to that data harvesting issue. But the additional feature that I see having an impact on consumers is the evolution of technology in the area of finance, specifically machine learning and artificial intelligence. Companies have a greater capacity to gather and analyze a customer's information, their buying habits, how they interact with and others. and they increasingly have the capability to leverage a consumer's data to make automated decisions that may not always be transparent to the consumer.
It sounds like we should be aware of what information they're sharing and learn to protect their data as much as possible, which I believe Anthony and I covered in episode 5 about the transition to financial independence. It's always a good reminder, though.
More good information for the consumer.
Absolutely.
Tom and Aaron, thank you so much for being here with us today. You know, with all financing option, including buy now, pay later, it seems like the best strategy is to be a proactive and informed consumer, ask questions, and read the fine print before committing. With that, this episode concludes our weekly series for Financial Literacy Month. Please continue to follow Insights by IDOF as we bring you relevant information about timely financial topics.
We want to thank you for joining us for our production of Insights, the Idaho Department of Finance. We'd love to hear from you and learn more about the ideas and topics that are on your mind. Forward your suggestions and feedback to our email address, finance@finance.idaho.gov.